You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website RickAckerman.com. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me on, Jim. It's always a pleasure.
Market uncertainty, you'd think the stock market would be really shaky over that, but you're finding that it's not, especially with all this talk of tariffs coming and going and going and coming.
Yeah, we're not in Kansas anymore. We certainly were in 1929. In fact, about a third of the American working population was connected to the agricultural economy, literally living off the land. But at the time, you know, the key headline back then concerning the stock market and everything else involved the Smoot-Hawley tariff. And the Smoot-Hawley tariff was a tariff regimen to be imposed on the rest of the world that compared to what Trump's done already, it was nothing. The Smoot-Hawley tariff was, comparing the Watergate burglary to all the stuff that happened under Biden and Obama. So the stock market, and there have been a lot of articles in Barron's, and it's almost an annual thing. They write about how the market had Smoot-Hawley jitters back in 1929, and every single headline would generate a reaction in the stock market. So people really cared. Wall Street cared. Investors cared. These days, when you get things going on that are so much worse than any threat that could be inferred from a Smoot-Hawley headline back in 1929, what's actually happening today is far worse, and yet the stock market just keeps going higher, which goes to show you that the stock market has no coordinates in reality anymore. It doesn't matter what the news is. It's force-fed by a stream of funny money that in for all intents and purposes is unlimited, and the money, leverage money, really is money borrowed into existence, and in that sense it's a creature of the mind. All the money comes to exist when people think whatever they're borrowing to buy will cost more or be worth more a week from then. So it's just amazing, really, that Smoot-Hawley tariffs were everything back then, and now we've got a market that's so psychotic that it really doesn't care about tariff news, and even if the news media gets all worked up about it, it's not even registering on Wall Street's dim consciousness.
Are they waiting for actual tariffs to hit? One, of course, consequence of this is Canada doesn't feel confident trading with the U.S. anymore and is looking for alternatives. Canadians are canceling trips to the U.S. even though the tariffs were canceled.
Yeah, they will. They will care. I mean, Canada will not. It's not like they're going to leave the game, just say screw it and walk away from the table. On a day-to-day basis, they're kind of trying to negotiate the best deal that they can get, and in the end, there'll be a compromise. I don't know whether it's all about fentanyl as far as the Mexican tariffs go, but they'll work it all.
Well, more I can tell you, more fentanyl's being produced in the trunk of a 1988 Cadillac in the alleyways of Cleveland then came across the border from Canada in a year. I mean, less than 0.02%.
It's definitely a good drug. It was made for crime. When you think about the amount of space $1 billion worth of marijuana takes up, why would anybody want to be in a marijuana business? It's all about fentanyl. And something that can be shipped, smuggled in 20 different forms and ways. So you can't blame. It's just good business if you're a criminal.
But like I said, Canada is not a major source of it. Hell, we make our own and get enough from the U.S. We don't have to export it.
major source of lumber for sure.
Yeah.
And, Canada has some leverage there. There was an interesting
story. Well, they said tariffs or not, they're going to need Canadian lumber to rebuild Los Angeles because thousands of homes were lost.
Huh. They use lumber for that, or is it all concrete?
Well, maybe they want to build with concrete now. You still need plywood forms to pour your concrete.
Well, we definitely need stuff from Canada. You're a good neighbor, even though you're politically pretty weird. But, they'll work it out. But there was an interesting story in a journal, somewhat counterintuitive, that was talking about the leverage that Trump has over China. And it has to do with the fact that China's consumer economy is really weakening. The Chinese have deflated in so many ways. They did some things to deflate the real estate bubble, and it correspondingly deflated consumer income. And so China is really in an economic wallow right now, and it desperately needs to sell us stuff. So they really don't have much leverage in their discussions with Trump, even though the headlines would make you think, Xi Jinping has got Trump over a barrel, or at least he's negotiating as an equal. But he's not. So China is going to have to kowtow more than you might suspect from the headlines, and we'll work out a deal with them too. I mean, that's what Trump does. He makes deals.
What's going on with gold?
It's getting whacked today, but it's just a lot of bull. Mm. You know, it's a gratuitous whacking. I've got a target of 3,040 for the April COMEX contract, and it'll get there, notwithstanding today's gratuitous thrashing. And, there's a lot of talk about, Trump's tariffs may at some point affect gold that's being shipped from London to the U.S., but also to China and India. And there are all sorts of stories. The London supplies of gold have been depleted. So there's a lot of things going on in the trade background, the flow of gold and gold delivery and all that. But I think you got to take a step back and say gold is going up simply because these times are getting just a little bit too interesting, and it's like musical chairs. You want to be sitting on a pretty good store of gold when the stuff hits the fan. So every sovereign entity on this planet has been trying to quietly accumulate gold, but the quiet thing that ended. You know, gold has clearly broken out in a technical sense, but also in a headline and news sense. Everybody knows that gold is moving. And it's moving higher. So the accumulators, which again is it's every central bank on planet Earth and every sovereign entity that buys gold and a lot of private entities as well, they all want it. And they no longer have the cover of darkness and quiet to do it. So you're going to see some nasty takedowns because gold is as criminally rigged a market as you'll find outside of the energy markets. And so the powers that be are not going to want to pay up. They're going to do things to shake the price of gold down. But the shakeouts are going to be more difficult to engineer because it's very plain that everybody wants gold right now.
Getting back to the stock market, you had a bench rather. You said stock market went whatever Microsoft did, the stock market followed.
Yeah, I've always taken that as an article of faith, that if you got Microsoft right, you get the stock market, the bull market right. But a guy posted in my chat room yesterday, he has a lot of very wealthy clients down in Arkansas, and he knows a thing or two. And he said, well, Rick, what do you think about the market? Because the broad averages are going higher, but Microsoft is languishing, and one of the other three or four biggest companies in the world, Apple, is languishing as well. You know, Apple couldn't innovate its way out of a wet paper bag, and it's taking its toll, and if recession hits, their one franchise that's working, selling phones, is going to go in a toity too. So So if you look at the lunatic stocks as a group, some of them, like Netflix, how much pricier can it get? The shares are already fully priced. So if you take the lunatic sector, what some people like to call the Magnificent Seven, and let's say that a year from now they're all kind of sitting where they are now. They barely move, but the Dow is trading up around 50,000. You would say at that point, well, you know, the market had to catch up with the lunatic stocks, and so I'm sort of coming around to the idea that the fact that Microsoft and Apple can't get out of their own way, it's just a rotation that they can easily languish for quite a while without bringing on a bear market. They'll just sort of maintain altitude, slightly lower maybe, and the rest of the bull market will continue with that with rotating money. So when I look at things that way, it makes me, let's say, more accepting of the absurd bullish case that everything's going to go a lot higher for a lot longer.
Now, if these tariffs go into effect, the North American auto industry could be devastated by it, because Canada and the U.S. interchange auto parts and partially built cars, I hear, seven times before a car is built. Same deal with Mexico, and they dominate the pickup market. Canada makes Honda cars, so they're not even Japanese. They're Canadian-made. Ford says they expect their profits to drop by $2 billion this year.
Right. If it's $2 billion here, $2 billion there, pretty soon you're talking about real money. No question, trade is a two-way street. And we're really shooting ourselves in the foot, or in the best possible interpretation, consumers are behind Trump. They think, oh, these foreigners have been screwing us for a long time. Let's make them play fair. You can do that. It's all right. But you need to, as a consumer, for sure, you need to acknowledge that everything is going to cost more. So that's the price we pay. And I guess Trump has decided that it's worth that price. But I think there's still reason for good hope that they're going to resolve things before we slap everybody with the 25% tariff. We're still in the threat stage. And, of course, Canada and Mexico got a 30-day reprieve.
Now, of course, Canada and Mexico are already looking for alternative markets and sources for product, just in case these tariffs do go in. And I also noticed an article that the European Union and the UK are fostering new free trade agreements with places like Malaysia.
Yeah, but they can do all the looking they want. However much everybody's looking for new markets, the U.S. is the market. And as I mentioned earlier, that has implications for China. China just has to keep exporting, or they're gonna have a revolution there. You know, they've got to sustain the consumer economy, and they can look as elsewhere as they want, but the U.S. is the main market for everybody for everything.
Now, on tourism, Thailand has banned Chinese tourists because too many of them were clogging up their beaches and leaving garbage behind.
Yeah, I know. I lived in San Francisco. I've heard that story before. Yeah. I don't know. We'll look at that as that's just the neighborly squabbles. But the U.S. is a whole different kettle of fish. And everybody hates us, but they still have to do business with us.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, what's the story with AI right now? Has NVIDIA taken it on the chin and now faces real competition?
Well, that's a funny thing. You know, you had a story out. Zero Hedge kind of broke the news to turn it into a thing that DeepSeek's jump into AI with a relative handful of NVIDIA chips many fewer chips than you thought were necessary to do what they did, was an absolute, about as creatively destructive as any new idea could be. So Deep Sea doing things that supposedly couldn't be done without enormous processing power and these spectacularly expensive chips that you can only buy from NVIDIA. So they bought many fewer of them to test their own ideas because they couldn't get their hands on all of the chips they wanted. And they came up with a pretty good, cheap solution. And it doesn't hurt that it's open source, that the whole world can kind of have what China's developed so far to develop on their own, which in itself mitigates the spyware story. You know, I mean, the Deep Sea product will be subject to scrutiny and experimentation and all that, and then who knows, maybe we can even get all these spying elements out of it. So I you could go either way. You know, I expected the reaction that we got, which was the Wall Street Journal comes out with a piece that looks at DeepSeek and its prospects, and it kind of yawns, an ostentatious yawn, just so that everybody knows that the journal thinks, well, the story is completely overblown. But the Zero Hedge story said, hey, this is it. This is the end of the world. This is a firestorm here. This is going to be a ruthless competition for investment sums that are already in the trillions. And the loss is already... NVIDIA kind of popped up. It took a dive initially, not on the news, but just on the, it wasn't news. It was only a week later that a couple of non-mainstream news sources made it clear that there was something big happening. So the journal said, nah, nothing really to be worried about. And everybody came up with 10 reasons why DeepSeek is just, oh, forget about it. It's not anything special, but I think it is. And I think that over time it will deflate the malinvestment that went into the AI story by many trillions of dollars. So it's very deflationary, but it's not as though everything were going to happen cataclysmically. It's going to take some time for the story to penetrate. And you know, you say, well, the clowns that are in for trillions, some of the biggest investors in the world, they're going to find a way to distribute some of that excess, but they won't. It's not like you can sell these $1 trillion overvalued positions to mom and pop. So the DeepSeek story, it's going to take years to play into the market, but I think that the story itself is valid, that it's a very big deal, that it changes the paradigm for AI development.
What's just happening with crude?
Well, it's had this huge rally, crude fluctuates within a $20, $25 range gratuitously, and when it gets to the top of the range, it turns and goes to the bottom of the range. So it's made its top just above 80, and it had a little bit of help from some inventory and supply stories. So it pushed above 80, which is a little bit above its channel range, and now it's headed back down into the 60s. So, and crude is really the largest manipulated, it's just like a casino game, that's all. You couldn't have swings this large based on factors of supply and demand. It's just something that the big players use. Energy is good collateral for other types of leveraging and paper shuffling. So crude is just a giant carnival game, and the price is irrelevant. At least if you try to relate it to supply and demand factors in the real world, energy consumption and things like that, it really doesn't have anything to do with it. It's just let's cause it to fluctuate over a wide range so we can generate a lot of action for this high-powered global casino. I don't want to sound too cynical, but anyway.
Anything else we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
Nope. The closer you watch, the more you're going to be bamboozled. That's the way these markets are structured. You know, if you look too closely, you'll start mistaking what's happening for like something real. You'll start thinking it has meaning and significance. It doesn't. It's just let's keep stocks moving up, keep some of these big markets moving up and down. We can trade the hell out of them, and that's what they're there for. Nobody, I don't think, thinks any longer this quaint thought that comes out of the 1950s that the stock market is there to raise capital for all these wonderful new companies and even the existing companies that are well established but just happen to need money. You know, get it made. There are a million ways to raise that money, and the stock market has become just sort of a side action crapshoot. So, but all right, one point I want to make because of what this subscriber posted in my own chat room. He's saying, Rick, couldn't it just be rotation and accepting the idea that Microsoft and the other lunatic stocks, the institutional phase, could just sit there? My new mantra is, as Bitcoin goes, so goes the market. So I'm replacing Microsoft as my get Microsoft right, and you can't go wrong in your prediction for the stock market. I'm switching that to Bitcoin. And I think that at least in a metaphorical sense, the connection is good because Bitcoin really is the speculative heart and soul of this market. And since the market is all bull twaddle, it's just a giant, you know, it's an epic casino unrelated to the real world. We may as well look at the locus of the craziness, which is Bitcoin, and say the market will keep going higher as long as Bitcoin can keep going higher. And Bitcoin, for a while, has been kind of go along. It's been a little too timid to take the market higher, but when it gets frisky, you're going to see that. You're going to be able to look and say, well, Bitcoin seems to be leading everything else up higher, and I think that's what that's where I'm shifting my focus, and I think it will be borne out with observation.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Always a pleasure, Jim. I enjoy the opportunity to connect with your vast audience.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.